Once again, thank you for listening to our Moments That Matter podcast originating from Belmont University. I'm John Roebuck. I am the Executive Director of the Institute for Innovative Faith-Based Leadership. I'm delighted to have in the studio with me today Hope Buckner. Hope is a communications specialist with the Office of Communications here on campus. As you know, if you've been listening to our podcast, one of my goals has been to interview various leaders on campus and off campus to kind of discover what makes them tick and what motivates them and what they think about leadership and how that's done effectively and so forth and so on. So I want to say welcome to Hope. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself in terms of what you do day in and day out.
Sure.
And a little bit about your family and how long you've been at Belmont, those kind of things.
Awesome. Well, I serve, as you said, as the communication specialist here at the university. I've been a member of the Belmont community for almost 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah, which feels unbelievable. I was an undergrad student, got my degree in public relations, left for a little while, but was still really engaged as an alumna, doing a number of other things, and now I'm back. I've been back about 2.5 years in the office, and I'm currently working on my graduate degree. So I've ticked all the boxes of constituents that we communicate with. I'm married to a Belmont alum who I met here in school.
Wow, so y'all just...
We're drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah,
that's right. That's right. Well, we're past drinking the Kool-Aid. We say we're swimming in it at this point. It's true. But my day-to-day is busy. Our office does a lot. We handle internal communication, so communicating with anybody on this campus, so faculty, staff, students.
So give an example of what that looks like.
Yeah, sure. So emails that come from a number of folks as well as from the office oftentimes originate with us. Anything that campus needs to know, so parking changes, anything that interrupts the day-to-day. If it's a move-in day and we need to communicate where you should park, where you should be, that's coming from us. Weekly emails to go out every week to faculty and staff.
And so how does all that integrate with other departments? For example, this week has been homecoming, a lot of things going on campus. Who originates those ideas? And you guys obviously have been pushing that information out. How does that work?
Sure. So the content is generally created by individual areas. And then we will work with folks to kind of tweak that content and be sure that it's written, you know, in the Belmont style and concisely and kind of within the constraints that we like to follow. And then we'll facilitate sending it out depending on what it is. At times we empower other folks to email all of campus. It kind of depends on the topic.
Yep.
But anything that's happening on our website, so the www.belmont.edu, is the individual pages are managed by the content experts, which would be the individual colleges and their teams. We manage the news site, so that's news.belmont.edu, which is where we're telling all of the success stories of this place.
So you tell not only information campus-wide, but also you're the resource, the communications office is, for what gets disseminated out to organizations in the city, news agencies and things like that.
Right. So internal communications, external communications. Crisis, which we define crisis as anything that interrupts the regular flow of campus. So that's snow, that's tornado warnings, all the way up to any kind of crisis you could imagine. And then finally, media relations. So we're managing relationships with media. We serve as the spokespeople for the institution. We're responding to media requests, which we get frequently. We've got a lot of faculty experts at this place who really know their stuff. And so we're pitching them out to speak on current topics. And then we're also receiving requests from media and kind of facilitating that process.
So your undergrad degree was in what?
Public relations.
So this really is tailor-made for the kind of thing that you like to do and want to do with your life and that kind of thing?
Yeah. So I studied PR in college and had the blessing, unique opportunity to work with the Office of Communications as a student worker for about a year and a half and just really fell in love with that work. I love higher education. I love being on a college campus. I like to say that everything for a student is big. They fall big. They win big. There's lots of energy. And I get a lot of energy around that too. So I love being on a college campus. I'm really interested in furthering my career as it relates to higher ed.
So let's talk a little bit about that. You're doing some graduate studies. Tell us what that looks like and what you're diving into.
Yeah. So my master's is a master's of education in nonprofit leadership. I've really found a calling in the nonprofit industry. It's really what I love. I've only actually ever worked for nonprofits within my career. And so when it was time to go back to grad school, that's a huge benefit for a Belmont employee. I really started focusing on what area do I want to kind of further my studies in, and nonprofit leadership was that world. So since starting that degree about 2 years ago, there's a thesis process included. or you have to do your own primary research, which is a lot for a full-time employee and a full-time student.
Sure.
But it has been one of the more fulfilling things I've ever done. The program really encourages you to figure out what it is you're most passionate about and then really narrow that down to a topic that you can turn into a thesis.
So tell me about your research. In particular, what is it that you are studying?
So I am looking at the value of collegiate-based mentoring experiences for women.
The value of collegiate-based
Mentoring experiences for women.
So what does that mean?
So essentially, it's women who are being mentored while in college, looking at what is the benefit of that experience. And so historically, the mentoring community does fantastic work, but primarily their populations are elementary school through high school. There are some programs across the country who assist students who are transitioning from high school to college,
right,
but there are very few, if any, who are really focused on the collegiate population. We see that in the research in academia as well as in the actual program implementation across the country. So I am really interested in the collegiate woman population, and I'm also really interested in mentoring. And so I did some work to try to figure out how do those overlap, and I found this gap. There really isn't a lot of there aren't a lot of programs being implemented, and there is no research surrounding what is valuable about a collegiate mentoring experience for a woman. So I am humbly trying to fill the gap.
And so do you find that there's a gap between mentoring for men or male students as opposed to female students? Because you're studying only female.
Right. So there is certainly a need for both.
Yep.
But I am, my skills and interests really align with the female population. So my thesis is focused on that. And what I found is historically there are three major accepted benefits for mentoring. Career-related benefits, which you would understand and expect. Psychosocial benefits, so more personal and kind of developmental. Mm-hmm. And role modeling. I want to be like you. Going into this, I expected that collegiate women in a mentoring experience are gaining career-related benefits, right? That's why you're in college.
Sure.
That's why you're on campus. But based on the qualitative study that I facilitated with women across the country, I found that, that's really not true. It's the psychosocial components of mentoring for women that they're pulling from these experiences. So women are learning, what does it mean to be themselves? What does it mean to be hope? How do I share my own story? What does my voice sound like? What am I passionate about? What's my vision for my life? And I can't form career-related aspects until I have that foundation. And so it's I would say, groundbreaking.
Well, let's go with that.
Okay.
So, you know, I know you love what you do.
Yeah.
I know you love being part of Belmont. So, but perfect job for you. 10 years from now, what does it look like?
Perfect job for me would be consulting. Well, I'd have my doctorate, ideally, in 10 years. It would be consulting with institutions across the country on mentoring programs for women.
Absolutely. Great
yeah.
idea.
Yeah,
so
thanks.
Let's talk a little bit about leadership.
Sure.
And, you know, we've got some questions, and we burned through some of these with some of the folks that I've been interviewing. But I'm always interested in this idea of, you know, you're talking about being a mentor, but I'm always interested in how people got into leadership. Was there a certain person, a key leader, a parent, a coach, a teacher? Who do you look at to be sort of your the person who led you into leadership thinking?
Yeah. So, you know, when I think about the people that have had the biggest impact on my life, it's less of the people who led me to leading and more of the people who have kept me there. And the number one person would be Dr. Susan West, who's mm-hmm. Vice President, Chief of Staff. I know she's been a guest on this podcast before.
Right.
She is a powerful example of what leadership should be. She is my mentor currently. I did know her in college, but we did not have the relationship that we have now. There are certainly folks along the way, professors, my dad, and others who really instilled in me an interest in coaching, which I would say is more so my leadership style, leading through coaching. But it's really been Dr. West since I've been back at Belmont mm-hmm. who has kind of reignited, or maybe not reignited, but really just like kindled the fire and love in me for leadership and for just desiring more for myself and the people around me.
Yeah, I mean, she is certainly such an amazing woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if she leads by example, just following her example or footsteps,
yeah,
it just would be an amazing takeaway.
She's amazing. One of the things that she said before that will forever stick with me is, you know, she's led a number of teams all throughout her career. And one story in particular that really stuck out to her, it was a time when a team had a challenging experience and didn't essentially live up to what they needed to do. And she said, when telling me about that, she said, if they go down, I'm going first. They'll have to follow me down. Meaning,
yep,
I am an exact everything they do, I'm going first. So if they fall and something goes wrong, they're not on their own. Like they're not going to have to take the fall for that. And so that was really, I think about that a lot. What does that mean to be a leader who doesn't just want the glory, but is willing to take the bad parts too?
I know when I interviewed her, she indicated that her number one trait or quality that she think is demanded of leadership is integrity. Mm. So I'm interested in kind of picking your brain a little bit about that. What are traits, habits, abilities that you think are essential to being an effective leader?
I think number one is kindness. And I think everything stems from that. And authenticity would be my two, probably. I think that's when I think about my own skill set and kind of what helps me be a successful leader, it comes down to relatability and kindness. Creating relationships with people quickly and them understanding that you are trustworthy, then your ability to lead them, their interest in following you follows naturally, and the other things will come. I think, of course, there are certain skills that assist being a good leader, but I think kindness is really what's foundational.
Really interesting. I just did some research not long ago on likability and leadership and what you do to make yourself more likable. And not that everybody has to like you to be a leader, but kindness was one of the top things that continued to kind of filter its way through a lot of the surveys that I kind of ran across. So kind of interested in that. So how do you develop or cultivate kindness if you're going to be a leader?
Yeah.
And maybe that's not your natural go-to emotion. Maybe you're not a kind person.
That's a great question. So I think it's remembering that it's not about you. Nothing is about you ever, but especially as a leader. Mm-hmm. If you understand that this isn't about me, this is about my team, this is about the success of our organization, this is about individual development of the people around me, then kindness flows in a way because you're not worried about your own agenda or your own growth, but instead you're worried about the success of the team and the individuals.
Well, I think that kindness is very much a contagious entity within us.
I agree too,
And people who are kind tend to somehow rub off on people around them.
Yeah, kill them with kindness. You hear that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that, too. And also, it's hard to be ugly, for me at least. Like, it's easier to just smile and find outlets in and ways to deal with stress and frustration, because it will come every day, likely. But it is significantly easier to just respond with kindness, even indifference, versus responding in a negative or mean way.
Yeah, I mean, obviously recognized as a fruit of the Spirit, part of the fruit of the Spirit.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
And so, you know, if
the Spirit
is
playing
in
my head.
Yeah, you should be kind as a natural outflow of the Spirit's work in your life.
Right.
Again, today we're talking with Hope Buckner, who is a communications specialist with the communications office here at Belmont. Hope, let's talk a little bit, because you guys are interested in pushing news out to the community and also to the campus. You know, Woodmont has, I mean, Belmont, old things die.
That's
die
right.
Slow
that's
deaths.
Right.
But Belmont has a very clearly defined set of core values, and part of your role, I would think, is continuing to kind of push those core values. So, how do you think that's done effectively? How do organizations push and continue to communicate core values to the people they serve?
Yeah, I am a firm believer in the power of storytelling, and I think the more we spend time in society, the more we see it. Whether it's social media, it's in huge interests in binge watching television shows. The reason folks like to do that, I think, is because they hear a story, they see a story, and they are able to become part of that family. I think about my own interest in Parenthood. Have you seen Parenthood?
Fabulous. I've been told I'm supposed to see it. I need to watch it. But that didn't make you cry every week.
Every single week. But
so why would I want to do that? Why would I want to cry?
Such a beautiful story. And by the end of it, I was so sad that the Braverman family wasn't a part of my weekly to-do list, right?
The Bravermans.
That's their names.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
To be a Braverman was a whole thing. And so, but that's an example of, insert any story here. You become invested in the lives of these people. So for Belmont and beyond Belmont, and this is kind of my own philosophy for sharing core values, is storytelling. So for us, we really believe in exemplifying who Belmont is in people. So that's fabulous stories of faculty, staff, students, alumni who are exemplifying what it means to be a Belmont community member. And beyond that, for me as a PR practitioner, my goal is that at the end of the day, I and the people around me can say, to know Hope Buckner is to know Belmont University. Because I am a complete and transparent reflection of the values that this institution upholds. And if we can continue telling stories of great people, then we can continue telling the values of the institution.
Yeah. Seth Godwin, in his book, Tribes, and talking about leadership, he says one of the things that key leaders do is they inspire people to share their story. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. I think effective storytelling, you know, if you look at the example of Jesus in the parables, use of the parables, you know, he connects the idea to a story and people remember the story. In the days when I was a pastor, I had no illusion that people would think or remember what I had said the day before, but they would remember the story for several days. And so if I could connect the thought to the story, then kind of off we go. So let's talk about a couple other areas. In motivating people to be their best, how would you respond to that? What do you do?
So a couple things. Again, I think it's about making it about them. People love talking about themselves, hearing about themselves. I'm a real believer in words of affirmation. Whether they are behind closed doors or even more successful often in public settings. I think when you can acknowledge the work of someone, it furthers their interest and desire to want to do more. I'm also a real believer in building community. I'm very tribal by nature. I love spending time around people and really building relationships. And so it's funny, we laugh about this in my office because I'm the one who is like, hey guys, what's everybody doing for lunch? Let's hop over to the, you know, conference room table and eat for 20 minutes.
Yeah, hey, thanks for all the invites, by the way.
Well, I was going to invite you for today.
Not once, but go ahead.
And so I think I am more motivated as an employee when I love and care about the people around me, because I know that what I do is a reflection on them. And so to get me to love and care about those people requires the building of a tribe, a community, a family. And so that can look like a number of things, whether it's lunches once a week, not even going out, taking 20 minutes to sit at a table together. Maybe it's a group text. Maybe it's, you know, a movie once a month out of the office, whatever it looks like for that individual organization. But I think building tribes is key, especially as we see millennials taking over the workforce. Yeah, They're very tribal in nature.
So, yeah, lean into that for a minute. And millennials are not only very tribal, they're also really good at collaborating. They love to collaborate, where older generation, you know, we tend to go to our office, we do our job, we do our work, we go home.
Right.
And so, I mean, have you seen that in your own experience in terms of, because I know in the office area, in the environment where you work, there are older and younger folks.
Sure.
Different generations are represented there. And do you find that to be true, that the older people get, the less collaborative they become?
No, I don't know that I've seen that. I do see that younger generations are collaborative, but I don't necessarily see the opposite of that, where older generations are less collaborative. It just seems like younger folks are more motivated by the idea of, let's get in a room and sticky note the heck out of these walls. Or where's a whiteboard? We love whiteboards. Or the giant sticky pads where you can pull them off and stick them everywhere. Very collaborative in nature. Though, I will say that in our office, I mean, we're a creative bunch. We're communications folks. So we don't do anything alone. We don't operate individually. We say you got to have two buy-ins before you can do it.
Right.
So there's three of us. So you got to have two votes before you can move forward. And it's just furthering the idea that two heads are better than one, and three is even better than two.
And you actually share office space very close off with April.
She's
does a
fantastic.
Great job.
You
get along well, and that's great.
So. We do. And one interesting thing about our relationship is that April taught me to write. I mean, when I came. And I tell her this all the time, and she says it's not true, but it is. When I came to work in the Office of Communications, I was a junior, and I did have some skills surrounding writing, and I'd taken some great classes and learned from a lot of faculty, but it truly is April Heffner who taught me to write, which I think is why we're able to, you can read something written in the Belmont Voice, and you couldn't tell if it was me or if it was April. And I think a lot of that is because I learned so much from her.
Yeah,
so
but
I'm
it has
very
a very, very distinctive voice, whoever has authored that, right?
Absolutely.
So not everything about being a leader is fun. So let's think about, can you tell me about difficult decisions that you make?
I think for me, the biggest challenges come when, you know, the needs of the organization could at times conflict with your own belief system. I have not seen this at Belmont as much as I have other places, but you know, or I'm a leader in a number of volunteer organizations, boards, and various groups of young professionals. And there are times when my own beliefs conflict with maybe what a fellow board member is encouraging, or maybe what the organization is asking for. And so I think at that time, it requires a lot of soul searching. There have been times where I have had to say, I can't do that. And so I think, especially as young people, it can be really scary when you feel like something is happening that shouldn't, and you just have to say, this is not in line with what I believe in, and so this might mean I can't serve in this capacity, and that's sad, and that's frustrating, and I wish it wasn't the case, but my own integrity, I have to be able to sleep at night, and so, you know, you got to step up.
So you say no to people in a very kind way.
That's because, right. Big smiles. Yeah.
So what are the three things you do best? What are your three best qualities? What do you think?
Oh, what an interesting question. I would say number one, building relationships.
Okay.
Number two, writing. And number three, energy. I bring a lot of energy to everything I do. Yeah.
And I would affirm that. I mean, those of you who listen to this may or may not know Hope. Hope is effervescent.
Thank you.
Enthusiastic, energetic, and really has brought such a great dimension to our campus in terms of just you know, a fun spirit, an energy, and I think that is also a very contagious thing.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that.
So maybe one or two other questions, and
sure,
we're going to wrap it up. But one of the questions that I kick around with students and with other groups is always this idea about leadership. Are you born to be a leader, or can you be led to become a leader? What do you think? Is it nature? Is it nurture? Is it both? What would you say?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's nurture. Certainly believe that there are aspects of folks that are more, you know, bred into you that could potentially create opportunities that will naturally lend themselves well to leadership. Are you a you know, comfortable public speaker? Are you confident? Can you stand in front of groups? Those kinds of things. However, leadership, I believe, is nurtured. It can absolutely be learned. With the right skill set, I think anyone can be a leader. So I think for some, that means, based on your nature, it's a longer path to
sure
get there, right? Yeah. But anybody can get there.
Okay. Kind of a final question. If perfect day off for you, what does that look like?
Oh, gosh. That's a great question.
It's a warm day. It's 70 degrees. It's sunny. And you got the day before you. What would you do?
Yeah. Well, my husband and I don't get to spend a ton of time together as it stands right now between grad school and work. And he's got a startup going. And so he's super busy. So he would definitely be included in the whole day.
Right.
And we're big foodies. So I think we would try to find a new restaurant in Nashville we haven't visited. And I'm gluten-free. So it limits a little bit what we can and can't eat. But it would include time with him and our dog. Hopefully they've got a little porch somewhere. We could grab some food and just kind of relax. Kind of slow.
Dog's name is?
Sassy.
Sassy. Okay.
Would you expect anything else?
Yeah.
No. She's awesome.
Well named.
8 pounds. Tiny little thing.
So best restaurant in Nashville for you is what then?
Well, easiest restaurant for me to eat at is a different question than like my, you know, my most delicious gluten-free meal. Those would be two answers.
I just want to know if you, you know, perfect day, you go into the restaurant, where are you going?
If it's a cheat day, probably Satco.
Oh, yeah. You know, hard to beat.
Yeah. Queso for sure. But there's a lot of, we love to eat. So we, you know, I love crepes at the Red Bicycle down in Germantown. My husband and I used to live there, so we would frequent that place a lot. We love brunch places. So we're, you know, biscuit love is super fun. Or, you know, we love to eat.
I was thinking about a crepe restaurant today with spicy chicken. We could call it the Crepes of Wrath. Wouldn't that be good?
I love that.
You know, don't ask me why I was thinking about that.
You should recommend
that
to Red Bicycle.
That's
great. Have you been there?
No.
Oh, it's
I used to have a red
so
bike,
good.
Though.
Oh, well, there you go.
Maybe I could ride it.
That's right.
So I want to thank Hope Buckner for being our guest today and her thoughts on leadership. I hope they have been of interest to all of you who may be listening. And I would invite you, if you're on campus, to get to know Hope. And just to enjoy being around her and feeling the energy and the enthusiasm that she brings. So, Hope, thank you for being here.
Thanks, John.
And,
this is great.
And thanks again for all of you who are a part of our Moments That Matter podcast here from Belmont University.